slow and steady.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiotakis. It's the morning open, a look at the economy as we begin trading for the day. Let's ask that question, where's Wall Street? Numbers are up right now. The S&P up about a tenth of a percent. Same for the Dow, as a matter of fact, up about 13 points at 96.39. European shares are slightly higher as well, under a quarter of a percent. And in Asia, the Nikkei had a slight gain. The Hang Seng, however, gave a little back. We got some government numbers this morning. The Commerce Department said total retail sales were up 2.7% in August. Julie Neiman is an analyst at Smith Moore & Company. She's joining us live from St. Louis. Good morning, Julie.
Morning, Steve.
So let's pick the number apart, shall we? We already knew cash for clunkers would help, but what else is in the mix here?
Well, the problem with clunkers, there will be no repeat because dealers have no inventory, so that's gone. You had a tax holiday and back to school. That was clothing, some computers and electronics, sporting goods. So that tax holiday really did work here. And here the value retailers were the real winners. Gasoline up 23%. And it's the price, not the, it's the price that they were paying for. It's not that they were selling more gasoline.
And gasoline, Julie, playing a big part. Another number this morning, producer prices, the PPI as we know it, was twice as high as expected. Do I hear an alarm for inflation?
Well, the surface, it looks scary, but you got to take a look at, of course, what's behind it. Energy was up the biggest amount, again, 23% on gasoline. Food was up 0.4%. It was in fruit and milk and eggs and those kinds of things. But if you net everything out, it's only up 0.2%. Now, there's no real problem here in producer price index or for inflation. Year over year, if you take a look at finished goods, it's down 4.3%, which means manufacturers have no pricing power. Wages aren't rising, and you're still seeing a big continued decline in asset prices. Housing's down, commercial real estate, and the Fed's not worried. They're going to keep the core interest rate, the bank rate, at zero. So there's no inflation to be concerned about there.
All right. Julie Neiman joining us from St. Louis. Julie, thanks.
You bet.
Well, today, President Obama goes to Pittsburgh to address the AFL-CIO's national convention. He should find union members in a pretty good mood. The president just gave big labor a big victory with his decision to impose sanctions against China over tire imports. But the organized labor movement is also learning that having friends in high places doesn't get you the things you really want. Jill Barchet reports.
Organized labor can finally dial the White House again. Richard Hurd is a professor of labor studies at Cornell University. He says union officials even got key posts inside the Department of Labor.
They have a better relationship with the Obama administration, not only than they had with the previous three Republican administrations, but also a better relationship than with the Clinton administration or Carter administration.
But other than a few minor victories like the China trade sanctions, organized labor doesn't have much to show for its access to the White House. The union movement's big push to reform labor laws in Obama's first 100 days failed.
There are some real problems because the National Labor Relations Board has three vacancies out of five seats. And so basically the implementation and enforcement of our labor laws is ground to a halt.
Hurd says unions will have to increase their numbers beyond 7% of the private sector workforce to have real influence. In New York, I'm Jill Barchet for Marketplace.
The president yesterday addressed Wall Street. He said taxpayers have gotten a 17% return so far as banks pay back bailout money. And there's word this morning that Citigroup is exploring ways to reduce the government's one-third stake in that bank. Here's Marketplace's Amy Scott.
The U.S. Treasury owns more than 7 billion common shares of Citigroup stock. Citing unnamed sources, Bloomberg News reports the Treasury may begin selling those shares as early as next month. Linus Wilson teaches finance at the University of Louisiana at Lafayette. He says that's a lot of stock to be trying to unload.
It would be very hard to sell the common stock stake to investors without negatively affecting the share price.
Bloomberg reports that the government may try to sell its shares gradually over 6 to 8 months. With the recent rise in Citigroup stock, the taxpayer could make a profit. Citi got $45 billion in bailout money. Even if the government sells its common shares, taxpayers are still out billions of dollars. The Wall Street Journal reports the bank plans to raise capital from investors to pay the rest back. In New York, I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
We'll You're listening to The Morning Report for Tuesday, September 15th, 2009, at Marketplace.org. It's a big day for the auto industry today at a very difficult time. The Frankfurt Auto Show opens, and our European correspondent Stephen Beard tells us what's at stake.
This is the first big car show since the industry underwent a series of major changes, among them Fiat buying Chrysler and GM selling a majority stake in its European division. This looks like a really challenging month for the car industry. After last month's upsurge due to the ending of the US Cash for Clunkers program, global sales in September are expected to slump, down some 19% on the same month last year. All this makes Frankfurt even more critical than usual. Opel is pinning its hopes of revival on a version of its Astra Compact. Other car companies are stressing the green theme. Mercedes is showing a new fuel cell vehicle, but Nissan, Honda and Mitsubishi are not showing up at all in Frankfurt to cut costs. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Mining companies and other investors are descending on Zimbabwe's capital today for what's being billed as the biggest ever mining conference there. Now, that country's economy has taken a nosedive in recent years, but its land is still rich in natural resources, including platinum and gold. Both sides of Zimbabwe's new coalition government hope the conference will help convince investors that the worst is over for the economy. Marketplace's Gretchen Wilson has more from Johannesburg.
It's been 1 year since President Robert Mugabe and his rival Morgan Tsvangirai agreed to form a power-sharing government. Today, they're joining forces to reignite the country's moribund mining industry. The southern African country has vast reserves of chrome, nickel, gold, and coal, plus the world's second-largest reserves of platinum, which is coveted by automakers. But most mining operations screeched to a halt about 10 years ago, when Mugabe's government started seizing property and calling for the nationalization of private firms. The coalition government says it wants to pass new laws that will attract foreign investment. It says a law once proposed by Mugabe to force mining firms to sell assets to local Zimbabweans is now being reconsidered. Investors at the conference hope to learn more about those laws before pouring money into exploration and development. In Johannesburg, I'm Gretchen Wilson for Marketplace.
This week, Marketplace Morning Report is airing a series called The Cure. It's part of our continuing coverage on the remaking of healthcare in America. And this morning, we take a look at the uninsured, more than 46 million people. They are patients who often end up in the emergency room, one of the most expensive ways to get treated, or perhaps they go without medical attention at all. Marketplace's Tamara Keith reports.
Frank Brown runs his own environmental consulting firm. Last year, business was so bad, he would have been better off in a minimum wage job. Then in January, his health insurance premiums jumped from $425 to more than $600 a month.
Once it gets to $608 a month and you're down to beans and rice for dinner, you have to make some choices.
He went to the doctor for one last checkup.
And then when I walked out, I said, well, that's it now. I'm going to have to be on my own for a while.
Like Brown, most people who don't have insurance do work, or they're in a family with someone who does. Diane Rowland is executive director of the Kaiser Commission on Medicaid and the Uninsured.
When we ask people why they're uninsured, the overwhelming number is that it's either that I'm not offered it through my employer or I can't afford it.
Rowland says the various health care bills take aim at the affordability problem.
The largest share of the cost of health reform is to make coverage affordable for the low-income and low- and modest-income population that's uninsured.
According to a Kaiser analysis, Medicaid could be expanded to cover 17 million of the lowest-income adults, and another 16 million could get government subsidies to help pay for coverage. June Turner is more interested in the provision that would prevent insurance companies from denying coverage to people with pre-existing conditions. 8 years ago, Turner had a heart attack.
The brokers tell me that even if the company would insure me, that the rates would be just astronomical.
Turner says she gets chest pain sometimes, but she doesn't go to the doctor because it's too expensive.
It feels like walking on a tight wire.
Like so many people, she's balancing her health with the fear of financial ruin. In Washington, I'm Tamara Keith for Marketplace.
There's a whole lot of information about the uninsured at our website, marketplace.org. Finally, the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department is looking for a few small cars, so it's leasing 17 electric Mini Coopers at $10 a pop each month. A spokeswoman there says the period allows deputies a chance to evaluate alternative fuel vehicles. Just don't expect authorities to transport more than, three and a half suspects comfortably. In Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiatakis. Have a great day.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.